Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. Most of America is doing nothing today, going to the mall with their wives and children, skiing in the High Sierra. What do people do on their day off? I have no idea. Everyone in radio took the day off. I don't understand that part of it. In other words, if the average Joe is off today, why should you be off if you're not the average Joe? If you're one of the elites in the media, as everyone in the media is, I love the people in the media who wear the cloak of the everyman. I love that one. How could anyone in the media pretend to be every man? I don't understand that part of it. How is that possible? You heard about that. I come up with a new phrase. You know, we've heard the left bash called, they call them pseudo-intellectuals, this and that. I have a new phrase for all of the people in the conservative media who pretend to be part of the regular crowd. I call them pseudo-rednecks. Hey, Beowulf, has anyone used that yet, the pseudo-redneck thing? I haven't. No, I was thinking about that on the air in my sleep the other night. All the pseudo-rednecks in the media. Hey, I'm just like you, you know. I'm not one of them. I'm not one of them elitists. I'm just like you. That goes to Sarah Palin again. You know. Look, the biggest thing on YouTube right now is Michael Savage says Sarah Palin is not electable. Hold on now. I didn't say she's not likable. I didn't say her heart's not in the right place. I didn't say that politically she doesn't say the right things. I said she's not electable. That's a different thing. But you're going to jump down my throat because you're a knee-jerk conservative. We've heard of knee-jerk liberals. But what you don't know is that what goes around comes around. And what's good for the gander is good for the goose. And you're either the goose or the gander, but there's such a thing as a knee-jerk, my friends. Now, speaking of knee-jerkers, you are listening to the Savage Nation, the one and only Savage Nation, unique unto itself in the United States of the Americas. And I don't know where I'm going to go today. I'm going to start with something from nature. Because to me, it is rewarding. It's eternally rewarding. So let me give you an example. It's been raining out here on the West Coast for weeks and weeks and months and months. The weather looked like Seattle. Nothing to do with global warming. In fact, if you go to michaelsavage.com, you will see that the lead scientist, so-called, in the global warming hoax, has admitted he doesn't know where the data is that he produced, the hockey stick data, so to speak. It doesn't exist. He lost it. He couldn't find it. He made it up. He didn't make it up. He saw it. It came once in a fantasy, but he confused it with reality. Although he's a scientist, he thought he was Merlin the Magician. He had a point he had on with moons and stars on it. He took it off and put on a white cloak, went to Harvard, then East Anglia University, and presto, Al Gore picked it up and made a fortune. The next thing you know, every czar in the world had a deal going for a green this and a green that, and Nancy Pelosi's friends in San Francisco all had millions and millions of dollars worth of green contracts with Obama because the earth was falling, the polar bears were dying, the ice caps were melting, but it turns out it's all bull crap. And so that's why I say to you, nature is eternally reassuring to me. So today was the first day of spring for me. Why do I say that? I know it's not the first day of spring. I know it's February 15th. I know what the calendar says, but we got a hot day today, 80 degrees out here in the San Francisco area. And I look at my yard. I'm finishing lunch before going to the station. I look in my backyard and I see the California jay. On the East Coast, they're known as bluebirds. Out here, they make a certain sound. They're very large, blue, bluebird-like birds. And they have a certain chirp to them that's very distinct, you know. And every time I see that bird or hear it, I look up because I remember when my kids were young, they loved that bird. So it brings back the whole, you know, childhood thing in the backyard, Oshkosh Bagosh clothing, because you see, we actually were blue collar in the sense that although I was an itinerant graduate student, I was, may as well have been a poor blue collar guy in the sense that I had no job because I was unfortunately born a white male. And although I had a PhD with a 4.0 index from one of the great universities and written 17 books, they chose instead to hire unqualified women and minorities in order to make certain that the universities would melt down into what they have become. But that's your gain. I'm not complaining. They did me a favor. It was only 20 years of my life that was destroyed. So I see the Jay in the backyard, and I see him pecking around looking for grubs. And I don't know what he was looking for in there. And he dug something up. It wasn't a worm. I looked carefully. I don't know what it was, but to him it was like a lobster thermidor. Or she jumped up on the fence and she was knocking down that lobster thermidor from the ground, happy. And I saw her looking around, you know, watching vigilantly. And I thought to myself, you know, contrary to the popular belief, it's not the early bird that gets the worm. It is the wise bird that gets the worm and doesn't get caught by the cat. And that reminds me of Obama. He is the training wheel president. He is actually the first training wheel president we have ever had. He is the man who can not only catch the worm, he can't catch the worm. He can't catch a break, primarily because the imposter has been exposed to most Americans. Everybody knows that the guy is faking it. Everybody except his czars. We've never seen as many czars since, the czars of Russia fell. And here we have czars. The country has confirmed over and over again that the public knows that he's false. They know that he's not a mainstream centrist. They know he's a radical left winger, probably a Marxist of some variety. And whatever he does, they're on to him. And so, as I say, it's not the early bird that catches the worm. It's the wise bird. And this bird is not wise. And it reminds me of another story, if I might tell you. You want me to tell you another one? Because it's another true story from Life 101. Real Life 101. I also know it's spring because I have allergies already. Right away already. See, this is the curse of life. You get a good, then you get a slap with bad. Whatever you get is good, bad. You go skiing, you break an ankle. You have sex, you get an STD. You like the spring, you get an allergy. That's the way God set it up, so you're not too happy for any length of time. Of course, that keeps the AMA happy, too, because you can go to one of the pill pushers for a med. And speaking of the meds, did you hear this story? I'll bet you this story doesn't make it to your paper. I'll bet you didn't even hear this one. Last week, there was a shooting at a University of Alabama. A woman professor opens up because they don't give her tenure, and she kills, I think, three. Opens fire on six colleagues at a faculty meeting, killing three of them. Afterwards, this psycho calmly calls her husband and asks him to pick her up as if nothing had happened. Now, guess who she turns out to be? You're never going to believe this. In a million years, you'll never know what this is about. This woman, Amy Bishop, who did the killing, you don't know who she is. She was a neurobiology professor at the University of Alabama. She's going up for tenure, which is a permanent job where you could strip naked in the classroom and chirp like a bluebird and keep your job. That's what tenure is. And they denied her tenure. So she opened up with a gun and killed three people. That's just her lifestyle choice. You understand that? Let me explain how this works. That's a lifestyle choice in America, because if it feels good, do it. To a left winger, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? It starts with sexual freedom and it ends up with homicide. Now, why am I connecting her to a left winger? Bingo, it turns out you're never going to believe this. A family source said Bishop, a mother of four children, was a far left political extremist who was obsessed with President Obama to the point of being off-putting. Shall I repeat that? She was not a right winger. She was not a right wing gun nut. She was a left winger. A left-winger obsessed with Obama. Did you hear what I said to you? Do you have any idea what I just said to you? Now, what does that have to do with Obama? I'm not implying Obama did it. Don't be crazy. I'm saying that she was obsessed with Obama, a radical left-wing big mouth, and the minute she was denied tenure, she opened up with a gun. So don't start telling me only right-wingers have guns and right-wingers this, right-wingers that. But there's much more to the story. There's much more to the story. You know a little bit about her history? Do you know that they're working with the FBI to learn more about why this woman, Bishop, was a suspect in the attempted bombing of Dr. Paul Rosenberg, who had received a double pipe bomb in the mail on December 19th, 1993? He ran from his Newton home with his wife, escaping without injury, and the bomb never exploded. She was quite cavalier about it, said someone who knew Bishop. She said Bishop grinned as she described being asked by cops whether she'd ever taken stamps off an envelope and fastened them onto something else. I cannot tell you what the grin meant, said the person who knows her. 7 years prior, this woman, Professor Bishop, shot her brother to death in an incident that was ruled an accident at the time. So this is the nut, the left-wing nut, that killed three teachers, wounded others in a shooting last week. So don't tell me guns kill, okay? It's not about guns kill. Now, why didn't you read about this woman, Amy Bishop, white woman, neurobiology professor, denied tenure? Did you read anything about the killing? No, because she was a woman. That was the first reason your friends in the media didn't report it. Now, if she had been a white male who had just returned from Iraq or Afghanistan, a combat vet, if she had blue eyes and blonde hair, looked like Timothy McVeigh, had a big cross on his chest, and was a Mormon who had several wives and multiple children, I can guarantee you'd be on the front page of every paper in America. I guarantee it. Okay? Which leads me to the next story, which I'm not going to tell you till I return right here on the Savage Nation. Be here.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about Obama, the training wheel president. We're talking about a college teacher who went nuts and shot three professors last week that you didn't read about. A, she's a woman, and B, a left-winger. That's why the vermin in the media didn't report on it. And about the California Jay that I saw in my backyard today. He's known as Aphelicoma. I can't even read the species. That's a tough one. I mean, I know botanical Latin. This is tough. Aphelicoma? Coriolescence, there it is, coriolescence. Crestless head, olive gray back, and white throat, outline in blue. Its head, tail, and wings are blue. Its calls are harsh, raspy, and varied, often in series of ones or twos. It sounds like Joe Biden. Its calls are harsh, raspy, and varied. It belongs to the same family as the other magpies and crows. It could be Joe Biden belongs to the Corvidae family. Its calls are harsh, raspy, and varied. No, that wouldn't be so much Joe Biden. Which of the liberals you say has a harsh, raspy, and varied call? If you want to put... Wrangle? Yeah. Oh, the tax man. The guy with the condo in the Dominican Republic who didn't know he had it. The guy who writes the tax laws and doesn't pay them. That guy? Yeah. I'm reading this thing on a California Jay. They kill him now with... This is horrible. They use rat traps and break their necks because they... Apparently, they eat up too many almonds and pistachios. That's horrible. Why should you break a jay's neck? Scrub jays can be taken by the use of a rat snap trap. Bait the trap with a nut or nut meat and set as illustrated. That's disgusting. Shooting will reduce the number of jays present, but it is costly and rather futile as a method of complete crop protection. See, there it is again, man and nature. Again in collision. Man and nature in collision. Who should die, who should live? The jay should die so the pistachio should live? Whatever. What do you want to talk about? Palin, no doubt? I know I'm going to get the Palin callers now. No, Mike, you're wrong. She's easily electable. Why, she reminds me of every woman I've ever fallen in love with, and therefore I want to vote for him, Mike. Stand by. Play Tammy Wynn so you'll know what I'm talking about now. Go to michaelsavage.com if you want to hear my 9-minute diatribe on why Palin is unelectable. Don't get mad at me. I'm just prognosticating one man's opinion, and I know more about it than you do. If you knew more about it than me, you'd have a radio show. You know, talking about radio shows, I was stopped in my apartment building the other day by a nice lady who said, "Oh, Mike, you're back in San Francisco. I didn't know it. A friend saw the article in the local paper, but I don't read it because it's liberal. I'm so glad. I was listening to this other guy who was on when you were off." I said, "Who, the guy?" She said, "I don't like him anymore." She says, "He's boring." I said, "Boring? You mean the guy who sounds like Groucho Marx's grandmother after a hysterectomy?" She said, "Yes." So she says, "Yeah, but he's conservative." I said, "So that's enough of a reason to listen to somebody because they say they're conservative? I mean, maybe there should be a little art form involved in the discussion as well as being conservative. That's some calling card. I mean, that's enough for a radio show? The guy who sounds like a hysterectomy case. Well, you see his numbers tumble the next the ratings come out. I was off for 4 months. He thought he was a genius. What do you want to do? I don't want to just bash the competition. I don't need to do it. I've got everything I want. I'm too important in my own mind anyway. You know, God's going to win in the end. So what's the difference here? Why get excited? Why get manicky over it all? Man at center of Katrina scam passes the buck. Take a look at this doll with his wife from Queens, New York. Ran a Katrina charity and the money disappeared. Oh, I'm shocked. Don't you remember when there was that tsunami in Indonesia? Was it Indonesia? No, yeah, Indonesia, right? A couple of years ago? And every junkie from Hollywood played the guitar for them? What did I tell you? Most of the money would wind up in the hands of a few grifters. I was right. And a few Muslim charities skimmed off a few $1 billion to arm the Taliban. You people are idiots. What do you give money to causes like this when not a nickel winds up in the hand of those who need it? It's like Sean Penn. I really got frosted over this. For 4 weeks after the Haiti earthquake, genuine heroes flew down there. Firemen, fire rescue teams, the U.S. Army, the Marines were down there pulling people out of rubble. Ministers were there saving people. After the last person was pulled from the rubble, there comes Sean Penn schmuck. Mr. Stonehead flies in with his sunglasses and gives a speech in the tarmac. This is a disgrace for America. We owe it to them. They're our neighbors. We should do more. And flies out. How do you believe these people? Don't you understand that liberalism is not only a mental disorder, but it's one of the most disgraceful fraud acts in the business? When are you going to wake up to this? Now play Tammy Wynes, and I will talk about Stand By Your Man as I talk about Sarah Palin being unelectable. See, when I hear Sarah Palin, this is the song that comes to mind. Not God Bless America. I didn't knock it. I think it's a nice song. You don't fight inexperience with more inexperience. You know what Hillary would do to her in a final debate? You talk about a scrub jay? She'd be like a canary facing a scrub jay. Hillary would mop the floor with her. What are you people, nuts? We need a businessman, a soldier, a patriot. It is the Savage Nation working while you party out there on the Savage Nation. There's a lot of news in the political world. Bye, said bye. No one knows why. 20 points up in the polls. Democrat from Indiana, he's leaving. I mean, I have my suspicions. To me, it looks like an Edwards job, and someone got something on him. There's no other reason. That's my guess now. There's no reason to say that. This is pure speculation, but something's wrong with that picture. But joining us now with another story where we know crystal clear why he's running is J.D. Hayworth, who announced today that he's going to run against John McCain in Arizona. And this is a good race for a lot of reasons. As we know, McCain is a shame. We know McCain threw the election to Obama. We know that McCain had one opportunity after another to win, and he wouldn't do it. And now J.D. Hayworth, who's a genuine conservative, a real one, is going to run against McCain in the primaries. I can't wait to see that one. J.D., welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it is so great to be back with you on the Savage Nation and to be able to announce to your audience that, yes, indeed, I am a candidate for the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate to succeed John McCain.
Now, do you get to debate McCain in a primary, J.D.?
Well, we very much want to debate John McCain as often as possible. And, in fact, Michael, with all due respect to John, and look, we all appreciate the sacrifices he's made for our country. None of us have anything but respect for John as a historical figure. But quite frankly, that so-called Straight Talk Express has been turned into the Zigzag Express. John is abandoning positions he held, claiming now that he's a conservative, and it's really an election year conversion. And so I hope we debate John McCain all over the place, and I may bring two chairs for both John McCain's, the one who campaigns like a conservative but who legislates like a liberal.
Well, what about illegal immigration? That's the hot-button issue in Arizona and so many other states. It came out today that many Mexican illegals are actually disseminating. They're the biggest distributors of black tar heroin in white communities in America. It's another epidemic that just exploded on the pages of the LA Times. We know that most of them come here to work, but we know that a good percentage of them don't. We know that one out of three illegal prisoners are illegal aliens. We know that they're bankrupting hospitals across the across America. Are you going to take a strong position on the illegal immigration story, Mr. Hayworth?
Well, you will recall, Michael, that I wrote a book that I would recommend to your listening audience, Whatever It Takes, on the way we could stop illegal immigration with an enforcement-first policy. I wrote that legislation when I was in the Congress. I am a vigorous opponent of the McCain amnesty plan. I was so thankful when you and so many others of us behind the microphone fought that plan tooth and toenail. And the facts were on our side, Michael. In fact, you'll know that the Heritage Foundation did a study on retirement benefits alone. Retirement benefits alone for illegals granted amnesty under McCain's plan, in the long term, that would cost taxpayers $2.6 trillion with a T. It makes no sense, and yet there's
John McCain
saying he supports comprehensive immigration reform, which you and I know is just a code word for amnesty.
Yes, and of course, they really want the votes as well as the cheap labor. If they were to grant amnesty to the 20 or so million illegal aliens with their families, that's the end of America as we know it. It'll be a lifetime of radical socialism in this country, J.D. But what is the let's say you beat McCain in the primary. Who do you run against?
Well, I'm not sure who the Democrats are going to put up, but I got to tell you, to the extent that midterm elections are a referendum on the performance of the president in office, I think people are waking up daily to the massive mistake that is the Obama administration. And quite frankly, I believe this race for the United States Senate, with all due respect to whomever the Democrats nominate, it's going to be really the Republican primary between John McCain and me. And it's real simple, Michael. John McCain has all the Washington establishment, and even though he says he wants campaign finance reform, he's got all the billions of dollars. And I'm sitting here just with great grassroots support. So John can keep all that money. I'll get the votes. But I do have to say this, Michael. I would really welcome the help of the Savage Nation. The website is jdforsenate.com. And right now we're doing what they call a money bomb, where people are contributing. And we can get this done. But it'll take grassroots work, not only in Arizona, but throughout the Savage Nation to get it done. So I just invite your listeners to log on to jdforsenate.com.
Now, J.D., I hope they do that. The global warming fraud has been exposed to everyone with a degree above the seventh grade. Anyone in the world with any education above the seventh grade knows that the entire global warming scam has been exposed. It came out today. The chief scientist, so-called, can't even find the data that he based all of this upon. And yet John McCain co-wrote the McCain-Lieberman cap-and-trade bill. You opposed cap-and-trade legislation, don't you?
I absolutely oppose it. It is a guarantee. It's almost as bad as amnesty. Amnesty, as you said, quite correctly, Michael, would profoundly change America for the worse, change the very fabric of the country. And likewise, this cap-and-trade, all it is designed to do is to restrict the abilities of Americans to fire the economic engines that bring prosperity, to cut into personal lifestyles, to dominate Americans, take away their freedom with a command and control culture, and basically to raise their taxes for energy prices. That's wrong. You're right. McCain wrote that bill, McCain-Lieberman. He's tried to back away from it this year as part of a campaign year conversion.
Oh, you mean McCain is now backing away from this cap-and-trade bill? That's amazing, because I would say in any debate, you could end it with that one alone. I mean, immigration and cap-and-trade is the end of it with him. J.D., let me ask you something. Let's say you win the primary when is the primary in Arizona?
Primary is in the long, hot summer. It's August 24th.
Okay, yeah. Primary is August 24th, and then, of course, the general election's November 2010?
That's correct, in November, yes.
So if you win in November, when would you be seated as the U.S. Senator from Arizona?
Well, I would be seated in the next Congress, which would come in January of 2011, unless Senator McCain wanted me to have a head start and would graciously resign the seat. And again, I'm not. That's just reality. Sometimes.
No, I know he's not ready to move to Mongolia to open that Buick dealership yet, is he?
Probably not. But that is one possibility. But in all likelihood, I would be seated in January of 2011.
J.D., let me ask you a favor. I'm going to do something open on this show. I try to be as open as possible. You well know I've been banned in Britain by the illegal socialist forces of the U.K. government. I'm pretty sure you heard about it, correct?
You bet, because my program in Phoenix used to precede yours, and I drive home listening to you. And I heard about the outrage of them banning your right to free speech.
I'll tell you what, if you promise to help get my name off that list when you become a U.S. senator, we will help get J.D. Hayworth into the U.S. Senate, because no other U.S. senator has come to my aid. Only one congressman has written a letter on my behalf. That would be wonderful Congressman Culberson of Texas. The rest of them have pretended I don't exist. But my audience will help you if you know you're going to help me. I'll tell you, I mean, it's a horse trade right on the air. I don't know if it's, you know, wrong or anything, but I need as much help as I can get. And I'm willing to throw all of the weight of the show behind you if you'll get my name off that list. I'm not asking for a dime in return. I just want fairness, and I don't have it right now, J.D.
I understand, Michael, but we do have to be very careful of what's called a quid pro quo, where you say, you do this for me, and I'll, because it is against the law. So let me...
It shows you how stupid I am and why I can't be a politician.
I just want to make sure everybody understands this. And again, it's one of the problems I have with John McCain. That whole McCain-Feingold so-called campaign finance reform did what? It restricted free speech in the political arena. It banned organizations like the National Rifle Association from doing certain advertising in the final days of a campaign, but carved out exceptions for media corporations like the New York Times. And so just let me say in general, the point you make broadly about, hey, if they ban Michael Savage in Britain, it actually speaks to our freedoms in the United States. I agree with that. I do not believe political expression should be extinguished either in the United States or in the British Isles among our British cousins in the UK. Indeed, I count one of the highlights of my life going to the Oxford Union, the world's oldest English debating society, and having a free and open debate. And incidentally, it's the closest an American will ever feel to being a prime minister, because there you are at the dispatch box between the benches. And I shudder to think that the United Kingdom, that embraces political debate in the fashion of the Oxford Union, would, through government action, try to silence you in the same way that, sadly, First Amendment rights...
I don't want to go on and on about it, J.D. This is about you, but I will tell you, I had been invited last summer to the Cambridge Union to debate, and then it was suddenly withdrawn, we know, because of political pressure from the Brown administration. Not only did they ban me from Britain, but they banned me from the Cambridge Union debate. I don't think that's ever happened in the history of the United Kingdom, and it's a very sad story. But anyway, I'll survive one way or the other, I'm sure. I think, if you stick to your story of being a true conservative, which, by the way, you didn't invent yesterday. I know you from previous appearances on this show. I know that you're a genuine conservative, and this is not a joke. That's real. You have a 100% pro-life voting record. You have an A rating from the NRA. You have a lifetime rating of 89 from Citizens Against Government Waste. You have a lifetime rating of 98 from the American Conservative Union. And if you compare any of that against poor old John McCain, who we all do love, really, in our own way, despite the ribbing, but he did a shameful thing in the campaign by not going for Obama's weaknesses, which he should have done. And I believe you should win, and I believe that the listeners will support you, J.D. Hayworth.
Well, I tell you what, Michael Savage, this time in visiting with the Savage Nation is just so gratifying and humbling to me, and I want to thank you for it very much. And you're right. I would just make one note. John, it was interesting. When I was still on the radio, John was buying time to attack me, a private citizen, telling half-truths about my record. But you mentioned Citizens Against Government Waste. For all John's railing against wasteful government spending, I have a higher lifetime rating. I have a better lifetime score than does John McCain. So it's pretty interesting to see what goes on here.
You're a skilled talk show host. You're a skilled politician. I wouldn't let him wriggle out of the immigration issue, the cap and trade issue, those two alone. And not alone the TARP money. You opposed TARP while McCain was a key vote for TARP. In fact, former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson said, quote, "We wouldn't have gotten TARP done if John McCain hadn't been supportive of it." McCain wanted to go even further. He proposed an additional $300 billion to buy up all of the bad debts, leaving the taxpayers to pay for the mistakes of others. You don't really need to sell yourself. He needs to explain himself, and that's how I would run the campaign against them. I wish you the greatest of luck. J.D. Hayworth, what's the website, sir?
Again, the website, Michael, is jdforsenate.com, and I just appreciate the help from the entire Savage Nation.
You got it, my friend, and keep on running.
Thank you, Michael. I look forward to our next visit. It's great to be back on the Savage Nation, and we're going to work this hard and be victorious here in Arizona.
Thank you very much. Good luck. The time is 46 minutes after the hour. That was J.D. Hayworth, who is a genuine conservative, true one, running against John McCain, a genuine rhino, a Republican in name only. You know, actually, it has no meaning, the word Republican in name only, when you think about it. Because a Republican in name only means exactly what they are. What do you mean in name only? When were they ever conservative? I mean, Republican in name only. When you say Republican, you immediately think liberal, don't you? I've always, when you said Republican to me, even when I was a kid, I saw guys in checked pants who went to country clubs. What do you mean Republican in name only? A Republican meant liberal. They were liberals with more money, well, less money. Let's put it this way. A Republican was a liberal with less money. Let's put it to you that way. Because liberals, as you well know, generally are very, very wealthy. The wealthiest people in America are all, quote, liberals. Why? You see, you don't understand this. This is what kills me. How could Nancy Pelosi, the richest woman in American politics, be a liberal? Why? Because with liberalism comes a certain degree of financial freedom that you and I don't have, that they have. Put two and two together. Think Dianne Feinstein. Think shopping carts in the sky. Can you play Lucina in the Sky with Diamonds before I take a break? I am so not ready to take a break, even though I'm running late. The phone number is, I don't want to keep repeating it. I'd rather talk about bluebirds in my backyard looking for grub. I'd still like to know what the J ate today. It wasn't a worm. It's amazing to me what nature is, how birds will find food. You don't have it? It's okay. You don't have to find it. How birds will find food, I can't even imagine what they're eating, these things. And to think they're descended from dinosaurs, I always amazed at that. You know, evolutionary theory is very interesting. You can look at them. If I watch cormorants. What's the big bird in the San Francisco Bay? I was out on the boat again yesterday. The pelican. You watch the pelican fly, you easily see the pterodactyl. I mean, you don't have to be an ornithologist to see that one. But they shrunk down over the millions of years and the eons. They figured, all right, look, we can't make it anymore at a pterodactyl. Will get smaller. See, they knew what to do. Obama doesn't understand that, which is, if this big, gigantic dinosaur of a government doesn't work, you shrink it in order to survive. The first thing I learned in high school from biology was, biology teaches one lesson. And I remember this in high school. Remember I told you I was a dreamy student, I didn't do very well on tests? But certain things stuck in my head. One of them was adapt or die. I'll never forget that. High school biology. You're sitting there, your mind is on a million things, the after-school job, the girl in a tight dungarees, the hair. Who could focus on an old teacher with halitosis in the front with chalk, and you want to get out of there in May, the blackboards and the erasers, you just can't wait to get, you're going to go nuts, the claustrophobia. But that stuck. You learn from animals certain things, the teacher said, and he said, one of them that we learned from nature is that the lesson is adapt or die. Now, we all know this in business. Either you adapt to changing market conditions or you go out of business. Everybody knows that except the Obama administration. They have a dinosaur of a governmental model. It's built on the former Soviet Union, which collapsed, by the way, under Ronald Reagan's pressure. Even the Soviet Union is privatized. This guy's going the way of the Soviet Union. He's taking private industry and nationalizing them. He's going by the way of Hugo Chavez. Soon, if you want to buy a loaf of bread, it could be $1,000 if this guy keeps it up. But he doesn't want to adapt or die. What does that mean? It means the government is out of control. It's the size of a dinosaur. If it wants to survive, it has to become a smaller bird. What does that mean? Fire your cronies. Cut all governmental agencies by 20% overnight. Cut off the what do you call them? I love this. Entitlements. Listen to these words. Entitlements. Oh, I'm entitled for medical care. What do you mean you're entitled? I'm paying for it. You're entitled to nothing. We're in the Constitution to say you're entitled to free medical care. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Look, I risk alienating my P1s by saying anything negative about Sarah Palin, so I won't say anything. Are you crazy? Are you out of your damn minds? She reminds me of a country western singer with the aw shucks pretending to be a president. What are you people, nuts? Yes, she says all the right things. Yes, she's a nice lady and her heart's in the right place. But you can see what happens when you have somebody who's unqualified step into the presidency because the people got emotional. Please don't do this to us, I say to myself. If the Republicans commit suicide with her, I quite don't know what I'm going to do. I'll tell you this, I'm not moving to New Zealand. That I can guarantee you. She's like Dolly Parton in her early days. Play a little country and western so they know what I'm talking about. I think we're going to mix Dolly Parton with... Yeah, that's like a Sarah... I could see that on the stage with Sarah Palin. Am I wrong? Guys, am I wrong? I'm not wrong. There goes the P1s. They're old. They were mad at me again. So when I first attacked Bush, they didn't know what to do. That was the end of the show for about 3 days till I came to their senses. I was right. You were wrong. Are you people nuts? Sarah Palin, president? I mean, you want Obama a second term? Go ahead. Make his day.
I don't want any American to ever close the door in their personal or their professional lives and put themselves in a box and say, heck yeah, I'm going to do that, or no way, I'm not going to do that, when we don't know what the future holds.
A mama grizzly rises up in me hearing things like that. You know, here again, cool, fine, come attack me. But when you make a suggestion like that, that certainly attacks
a
kid.
No, if you want Obama for a second term, just make sure that Palin is the Republican nominee. That's all. I didn't say she's bad. I didn't say her heart's not in the right place. I just know more about the American electorate than you do. And I know more about it than the stupid Republican Party does. And I am telling you that if they make that idiotic mistake of pushing her as their lead candidate, it's over. Obama will get a second term no matter how bad his presidency has been. That's my opinion.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Commies, now neocons, welcome to the Savage Nation. I wonder how many millions of my listeners love the Beatles and were hippies who have become wise to the ways of the world and have abandoned their love beads and patchouli oil and are now fiscal conservatives. At least I would say a large percentage of you have come to understand what it means to make a dollar and hold on to it. Play it louder, come on. It was your cue to turn it up a little. All right, turn it off. It lost its moment. It's like sex. You know what I mean? When the moment comes, that's it. That's the story. It's the bubble. It's like the music bubble, the sex bubble. It's all one and the same. If it bursts, it's over. So we're going to talk about Palin. Is she electable? Because somehow that got picked up by Mr. Breitbart. Andrew did it. Put it on YouTube, and it's all over the media. Savage says Palin is unelectable. Now, I understand many of you are going to be mad at me because you didn't hear the whole piece. The whole piece says that doesn't mean she's not likable. It doesn't mean she's not correct politically. The question is a calculation. Can she be elected? My answer is no. And so we can talk about this, and we will, and we'll argue over it. I'm sure we will. Many of you are angry at me, and you don't understand me. If you want to remember the history of Michael Savage a little bit, and it's a long 15-year history on the radio, A year before Bush was out of office, I called him a fiscal socialist. Many of you got very angry at me. You said, how dare you? He's a Republican. I said, yeah, but he's built a bigger government than the last three administrations together. Don't you see what he's doing? Doesn't matter. He's a Republican. He's better than the other guys. I said, come on, don't be stupid. So I declared him a fiscal socialist. And 3 months before Bush was through, I said, watch out. He's not through yet. He's got 3 big months to go. And sure was I right, Paulson and him. They went for the gold. $1 trillion in debt they built up in TARP and stimulus. It was all a schmear job of their friends. It was cream cheese on the bagel. I mean, the cream cheese falleth over, you know. So now we are sitting here talking about various and sundry things on the Savage Nation. I got to go back to the city that I love so much, particularly the city I love to hate, which is San Francisco. Now, I love the city, but I don't like most of the people in it. That's the problem. And I mainly hate the white yuppie more than anybody else. They're amongst the most idiotic people I've ever seen on planet Earth. Here we have men their age dying in Afghanistan so they can be free to have a pillow fight last night. Last, as you well know, it's President's Day weekend, meaning Washington and Lincoln, but we're not allowed to say that anymore. Because they're white males, you can't say Washington and Lincoln. You have to say president, so that way you can include Obama in it, or Bill Clinton, which is absurd. It used to be Washington's birthday, Lincoln's birthday, because they're both great presidents. Everybody knew that. So now it's President's Day. So last night, I made a mistake. I said to myself, I shouldn't go into the city because I know that it's going to be jammed, the roads. People said, oh, no, no, everyone celebrated Saturday night. Don't be silly. I got stuck in the Waldo Grade, a grinding drive-in from Sausalito. Whatever. Then you get in the city. I never saw anything like it. The Embarcadero had cars that went on for 4 hours from Fisherman's Wharf all the way to the San Francisco Bay Bridge. And I found out why. It wasn't just the traffic. A group of 30-something schmucks with nothing to do go out in the street in the middle of the roadway, and they have a grand San Francisco pillow fight blocking traffic. The cops do nothing. The reason the cops did nothing is because Mayor Schmuckola, any Twosome Newsome, looks the other way. Anytime the white yuppie liberal wants to block traffic, the schmuck is nowhere to be seen. He thinks that he has to cater to them. Now, if I was the mayor, they would have been in prison. I'd make them clean toilets for what they did. 30 days in the slammer, take your pillows and shove it, and I'd make these little brats go out and pick up every feather that flew in the street. But instead, they show them with a headband on like they're Che Guevara. They all have something on their wrist now. Those wrist things they all have. I don't know what the hell it... And then the kissing in the street and throwing pillows at each other. Why is this happening in San Francisco when the world is such a dangerous place? Children, immature. But you have to be a sociologist to understand this. People are not growing up anymore. They don't have children. Many of them are living with their parents into their 30s, playing silly little games like this in the street. An entire generation of young adults who are developmentally stuck at around age 12, considered to be hippies or yippies or hipsters. They're nothing. They're schmucks. And that's what police were invented for. Not just to take the dangerous felon off the street, but to take the dangerous moron off the street. There, I've gotten it off my chest. Now we can go on to Obama, the neo-Marxist, Obama, the neo-com, and his czars, and is Sarah Palin electable on the Savage Nation? Now, in the last hour, if you missed the last hour, you missed me talking about birds, the California jay. And it was an interesting analogy I came up with on the Natch, which was this. You look at a bird, I look at a bird. So as I say, I'm a boater, and I love looking at birds on the bay as much as any other reason I go out is the birds, the seals, the baby seals. You look at the birds, and you know that according to evolutionary theory, they are descended from dinosaurs. They're descended from pterodactyls. In other words, monstrously large animals that adapted through the ages, becoming smaller and smaller with scarcer resources. And those that adapted survived, and those that didn't adapt died. So I said, well, we all know that in our own life. And I was talking about how in high school we learn that the primary lesson from biology is that animals teach us to adapt or die. And you know that from your own life. Maybe your business has lost market share. So you've adapted. Your products you develop don't sell. So you come up with new products. And you keep trying and trying, and you adapt or you die, right? Build a better mousetrap, and they'll beat a door to build a better mousetrap, and they'll beat a path to your door. That's an old adage of American business law. It's true. You ask anybody. You build a better mousetrap, and people will beat a path to your door. I don't care what the economy is. You give people what they need in a downtime. There's still money around. There's still people around. There's still need around. You'll still become a rich person. That's the beauty of capitalism. But the main story is that adapt or die. The bird descended from a much larger creature. And the creature through the ages became smaller and smaller and smaller, again, to survive on scarcer resources. So that's why we have birds of the size that we see. And I make the analogy to government. Obama does not understand that this creature called the U.S. government is an extinct bird. It cannot survive. It cannot support itself. It is like the dinosaur. And unless it adapts to something and becomes something much smaller and leaner, it will die. Unfortunately, we'll die with it. And that's why we're screaming. That's what the town hall meetings are about. That's what the talk radio has been about. That is what the teabag movement's about. It's all about adapt or die. You're killing the country. You can't keep growing government. You've got to shrink government. You fire 20% of the people across the board. You close down departments. And you tighten your belt. Now, this is something that business people understand. By my unscientific analysis of the teabag movement, the largest percentage of people in that movement are small business owners. They know from their own experience what must be done to run a government. Obama never ran a lemonade stand, let alone a government. He has no experience, change, and hope. He got a couple of slogans from some shysters, and he ran with it, and he won. But now that he won, he doesn't know how to run the government. Instead of shrinking the government, he's expanding the government. Instead of becoming smaller and leaner, he's gotten fatter and slower. And so that's why the American people have awakened to him. So that's what I'm trying to is get at here in this hour. Now, enter from stage right, Sarah Palin. She's likable. She says all the right things, but she's not electable, in my opinion. What is your opinion? This is the Savage Nation. You know the phone number. The website has the YouTube piece, Savage Says Palin Unelectable. It's on michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. Palin not electable, says Michael Savage. Wow, that apparently caught fire. That caught fire across the something sphere, the radio sphere, the blogosphere, the hogosphere, the magosphere, the myosphere, the diosphere. And we're going to talk about that. But there are some other stories that are on my website, like hey, heroin dealers go to clinics to meet addicts trying to quit, from the LA Times. Immigrants from an obscure corner of Mexico are changing heroin use in many parts of America, targeting people at methadone clinics and people in white communities where there's less crime, and selling them black tar heroin. I was shocked to read this story, this epidemic. You know those little guys who stand on the I want work corners? You know the little employment centers that all your local Democrat politicians were in favor of, favoring the illegal aliens? Oh, yeah, they just wanted them for carpentry, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little carpentry. Bye says bye-bye. He's leaving not secret election this November. 20 points up. No one knows why. I don't know. Something's coming. His shoe's about to fall. Or someone gave him a blackmailer. Either withdraw or suddenly, you know. That's my guess. It's a one man's opinion thing. ClimateGate. Viscount Monckton takes a victory lap. Remember I had Monckton on years ago saying that global warming was a fraud? He was right. Palestinians torment Israeli police with thousands of abusive calls. You hear this? That's what's going on there. That's a wonderful two-state solution over there. All right, let's take the calls. 860 on the dial. All Sports 860. San Francisco. John, welcome from the land of the pillow fight.
Dr. Savage, I am the jazz cornet player that talked to you last year about why you were going to live longer than most of your friends. It was because how your mind works.
What, you mean that helps? That helps the arteries by talking a lot. Your arteries are clear.
No, by improvising as brilliant as you do. And here's a great thing for the audience to listen to: is the fact that it's no mistake you have, you put the story of Sam the Butcher in two of your books. I think that has huge implications for our next president.
I can't wait. Wait a minute. Sam the Butcher. Let me hear this one.
Now, here's what I'm thinking. Now, I'm a jazz improviser, but I know how your mind works. And I'm thinking that what we need to have in the White House is a predominant male figure with huge military experience that is able to look at the Fort Hood massacre man and see who he is for who he is. And it's amazing to me that story of Sam the Butcher. When you were just a little guy, you could smell a rat. And that's why it was that you took this lady back there and saw that this guy was, you know, giving her the shaft. And
well,
then,
wait,
you know,
you got it. You got it partly right. No, she could smell a rat. She taught me how to smell a rat. In other words, she'd pick a steak out of the front and he'd say, "Don't worry, dear, I'll take it in the back where I have the grinder in the freezer." Even in the summer, she'd put on a fur coat to go in because she knew he'd put the steak away and give her a cheaper cut of ground meat. That was my aunt from Russia. She knew everything.
Isn't that amazing? But if you look at, you know, I've gone back several times and looked at that picture of the Fort Hood massacre guy, and he looks like, you know, he looks like Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the Muslim Major Hassan, the smiley face Major Hassan?
Exactly. And so,
yeah, here's a guy who was screaming every day of his life, "I will kill," in one way or another. He would take patients and he'd write, "Allah be great," on the bottom of a psychiatric report. And the schmucks in the military were afraid to fire him for fear that they'd be fired. So they keep demoting him and promoting him. They promote him and send him off one base to the other. Now, I want to ask you and everyone else something. What if a Christian doctor had written "Jesus saves" on a medical report? How long would he last in the military?
Yeah, probably not long, I'm afraid.
Before the last S was on the paper, he'd be out the door. He'd be sectionated out of the military. So why was Major Hassan not thrown out? Answer, because he's a Muslim. And why is the question? Why do they protect Muslims in the military and every other avenue of government? I'll give you that answer at another time. So what are you getting at?
I'm getting the fact that until we get somebody as a commander-in-chief who understands that whole concept and the mess that the U.S. is in, and somebody that can look at a Sam the Butcher and call him for what he is, a rat, then, you know, we're going to be in a world of hurt. And even
you won't believe this one. You know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is a man named Mike Mullen. He looks very good in the suit and he has a very deep voice. He's the one who doesn't permit the Navy to fire a shot. I think he probably would be very happy with the fact that the Navy SEALs are being prosecuted. But here's a guy who says today that an attack on Iran's nuclear facilities worries him. This is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He says he's concerned about the consequences of any attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. My friend, what side is he working for? What would you say, John?
Boy. It really makes you scratch your head, doesn't it?
I don't know. Is this guy a Manchurian candidate that he's told the Navy to stand down at every turn? That he's telling the military, this man is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he says an attack on Iran's nuclear facilities worries him?
Yeah.
What the hell is his job? His job is not to worry, but to take them out before they take us out.
And that's the whole thing. That's the whole premise. We cannot have somebody who's driving the ship called the United States with no military experience.
I'm getting out of breath, and it's only Monday. I got a whole week to go, and tomorrow the magazine's coming to photograph me. I better slow down. Where do you play the clarinet?
And that's why, you know, just go and put some Charlie Parker and Coltrane records on when
John,
you're off.
John, you play the jazz clarinet?
That's right. Yeah, I've been playing. My jazz father actually traveled and played with Charlie Parker.
No, come on.
I have a photo right here.
John, where do you play in San Francisco?
Well, I'm listening online because our friends up here in Seattle put you on the later. You're not live here anymore.
Oh, I was too much of a threat to the social order of the schmuckolas. I get it.
Yeah.
John, let me send you a free copy of my new book, Banned in San Francisco. It's a joke. I thank you for calling. He's listening online. That's okay. Now I'm banned in Seattle as well.
Savage.
Odyssey Part 1. Who's playing this, by the way? Posey Cole. I remember when I first heard this, it was so revolutionary. Studying geometry and listening to this on the bus. No, we didn't listen on the bus. There were no earplugs. You got killed. If you took a radio on a bus, then the driver stopped and threw the radio out and gave you a beating. Today, the driver gets shot if he asks you to even turn the radio off. Israeli cult leader charged with enslavement and rape. An Israeli man accused of having 23 wives and fathering 59 children was charged Sunday in a Tel Aviv court with multiple counts of sexual assault, rape, sodomy, and enslavement. Goel Ratzon, 60, was arrested last month. Authorities charged that he lived in a compound with the 23 wives, having convinced them that he was omnipotent. See, the thing is he was in the wrong longitude. If he had moved south on the longitude scale and he was in Saudi Arabia, that would be a normal. It would have made him a prince. In other words, what he did was wrong in Israel because Jews don't do that. They're not allowed to have 23 wives and 59 children. But, you know, in Saudi Arabia, that's a norm with the rich there. Well, you don't know about it, so it doesn't happen? What do you think it's all about? What do you think they're all so fat and happy and died 53? Sacramento Frank, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, you're right. She is unelectable. But watch all these people in the press who savaged her when she was running with McCain just tell us how great she is until she gets the nomination.
Exactly. Remember how they boosted McCain to run against Obama because they knew he was a fall guy and easily knocked down?
Exactly.
And any true conservative, they reserved all of their vitriol for them. It's typical. You're right. It's interesting. They will support her because she's easily defeated. But remember, she's got to go through a Republican primary first. So we can start speculating on that. It's too early for that. But let's say she wins the primary. She's easily defeated by either Hillary Clinton or Obama. No one's taking a chance on an inexperienced woman.
Yeah, they've already hopefully learned a lesson with him, but I'm surprised so many people...
No, they haven't learned with him. I mean, yeah, the people have learned with him, but not the Republicans. They learned from nothing.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. Let's move on. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. You want me to talk about my bad lunch, the pillow fight, the bird? What else? For the first, I saw California Blue Jay in my backyard looking for worms. There's so much news out there. I mean, I don't have to kill myself. The show does itself now. At this point, the 15 years of a buildup, the audience knows me, they trust me, they know to expect the unexpected. The news they like, they get it, but then they're waiting for something oddball to come out. They really don't want to hear the news. They know what it is. Well, some of it they know. They look in the racks for the news. You ever see libs? They look in racks. Liberals don't even buy newspapers anymore. You don't buy them because of the slant. See, conservatives are the normal newspaper buyer, but there are no newspapers to buy other than the Washington Times, so you don't buy a paper. The libs who read the paper don't buy it. They look in machines. Have you ever seen them crouching over into a news machine? They don't even put the quarter of 50 cents in. Now they're a dollar. Unheard of. Unheard of. A dollar for a newspaper. So the libs squint inside like the plastic is yellowed from the sun. Beaten in from the anarchists who spray painted, you know, like die, pig, die. And they have to now read around all of that stuff. You know, newspapers lie, and then they look in between that for the headline. The headline's always the same, Obama saves world. Obama saves Haiti. Obama saves Russia. Obama saves America. Obama saves Prius. They look in there for all their truths inside that little, it's like the old newspaper machine on the corner rack machine is the crystal ball of the cheap lib. No, I'm giddy. I'm feeling good. What's wrong with me? Why do I feel it's very dangerous to feel this good? It's not good. It's not good. I know what happens. Every time I feel this good, usually it... Well, Monday, I'm usually good. I'm built up over the weekend. I'm rested, tan, ready for the fight. But it's round one of a five-round, you know, like extreme fighting thing. This is 5 days a week. This is only round one. Usually Tuesday, I'm total depressive. The complete a crash like you can't believe. But I'll be good tomorrow because I got the magazine flying a staff of photographers out for Chicago. I can't believe it. That for like the New Yorker, they did a cartoon. I didn't even have to pose. They took a previous picture and cartooned me, which I like. I like the cartoon. I have two blow-ups of it in each of my houses. you know, east-west. I like that picture. It kind of like reminds me of like the old New York, you know, the Joey Lewis era, like on the club and the wall, eat at Moe's Deli. No, but higher level than Moe's Deli. I eat at Katz's. I don't go in any restaurant where they have my picture, but I don't want the picture. Now, the New York Times, when they wrote me up, the guy took the best picture of me and Teddy. The best. I don't even know who he was. A very nice guy. Black guy. Very good photographer. The best of all. Now they're sending a photography team out from Chicago to take one picture of me. And it's a headshot. Now, I'm at a certain age. I'm not a bad-looking guy. I'm actually fairly decent-looking for a guy of any age. Some would call me handsome. But the... No, I'm serious about it. I'm not a bad-looking guy. I mean, don't think Rush Limbaugh when you think Michael Savage. Just, please, please, don't put me in the same category. God bless him, but that type I'm not. Whatever type it is, I'm not that type. I look like a liberal to most people. They see me, they assume I'm on their side. They have no idea what's going on inside my head. Why? Dark eyes, dark hair at some point in my life. And a beard. You look on my website, Michael Savage, you see a beard, like a goatee I've had. I would get rid of it right now, was it not for this picture. I was ready to cut it off for 2010. I grew this beard when I was 19 to take my first teaching job at 20, because I looked young. I looked as young as the kids, so I grew a beard. I wanted to look, here comes the teacher, you know, with the beard. But it's a number of years later now, I don't need it anymore, you know. But I can't cut it because the image is tied into the goatee. So they're coming out with a... for me, it's a big deal. I'm not in television. Yeah, I just did a TV ad for the 860 station. You got to hear this story. You won't believe this. A little background may be interesting. So I switch over to 860 on a dial in San Francisco, and they put in a lot of money in TV ads, which are about to hit next week. So I cut them last week, and they're short ads for a saturation campaign on television. So my line is, I wrote the line, which is this. Sports are like politics. Either you're safe or you're out. Don't be a schmuck. Listen to Michael Savage on 860 on a dial. So we do every version of that, including one without the schmuck in it. And the guys were laughing. Everyone loved that. Don't be a schmuck, you know, over and over again. Turns out the TV stations will not run the schmuck ad, so they're running the non-schmuck TV ad for me. So I said to the guys at the station today, I said, send me the schmuck ad, and I'll run it on my website like a special deal. It'll wind up on YouTube. See the schmuck ad that the TV stations... See Savage's schmuck ad that the TV stations wouldn't run. I thought it was a good line. In sports or in politics, either you're safe or you're out. Don't be a schmuck. Listen to Michael Savage at 8:16 on a dial, 3 o'clock every day, blah, blah, blah. I thought that would catch more attention than, you know, the non-schmuck one. So they're coming tomorrow, and I have to decide what to wear. Now, this guy wrote an article you'll know what it is the minute I tell you, but it's going to be done anyway. It's going to come out in May. I'm not telling you the magazine. The writer did a profile of Donald Trump, and he did one of George Carlin, amongst others. The George Carlin, they're all headshots. Trump, actually, I don't think was a headshot. It was more like a head and body by the desk kind of thing, because he's into like the office thing. He's got his own image machine. I don't have an image machine. It's like me and the dog in the studio. What image machine? So here's the thing, is I don't know what to say to the photographer. Like, models go through this, and I don't know, like TV people do it all the time. And I'm trying to think, like, what face do I want him to project? I may show him like five of the pictures, you know, the angry savage, the happy savage, the kindly savage, the angry savage. You know, I don't know which savage he's going to show, because there are many faces of a person. You know it from yourself. What do you think? You have one face? Which face is yours? Did you ever think about that? Which face? The presentation of self in everyday life. I read that in college 500 years ago. It was a very famous book. The presentation of self in everyday life. That was the first awareness I ever had that there were many different presentations of yourself. I didn't know about that. I think you acted like yourself. That's why I did so poorly in the beginning, because I didn't know how to act. I just, you know, I blundered into things. So anyway, so what am I going to wear? No white shirt, TV rule. I got a beautiful yellowish shirt. I got a very expensive tie, something that I know how to make a Windsor knot. I learned in the 9th grade. And a nice camel jacket with the good shoulders with the crinkle, isn't it? So then the head becomes the issue. The hair, the nose hair, the ear hair. Oh, my God, I hate this. Because close-ups. If this guy shoots models who are airbrushed and made up, you know, they're sending out a makeup person at my request, but I'm not going to do a heavy, you know, like for a shine here, a pimple there. But how do you get rid of nose and ear hair? I once had a turbo ear, nose and cleaner. But there's a problem with that item, because if you put it in your ear and you cut out all the hairs, they can fall down the, and you can go deaf. So I don't do that, because like a man in my day all had hair in their ears to keep flies out from the old world. Something, I know God made it. Why is it when you get older there's more flies threatening you? That's what I don't understand. In other words, if hair in the ear tube is meant to protect you from, because I'd ask my father, Dad, what is hair for in a body? He knew everything, all natural things he knew. Well, young savage, hair on the body is to protect you from the attack of insects. Interesting. So children are not attacked by insects. So they are protected by the parent. They are clothed better. You mean when you're old, you're naked or something? I don't understand that. But there's some other reason for the adaptation of hair in the ear and nose when you get older, which I'll never understand. I need it on the front of my head, not in my ears. Hello? What, I mean, can't we, you talk about genetic modification. It's very interesting. Why not just take the gene that puts hair in the ear and put it on your forehead, the forehead gene? What's the biological adaptive reason for losing hair on the front of your head? I don't understand that one. In other words, let's say everything's natural. So the hair grows in your ears and your nose and falls off your head. And then on your back also makes you look like the hairy ape. Like in a Russian novel from the 19th century. You wake up in the mirror one day. One day you're handsome. The next day you look like the hairy ape. Like a Gogol. It's like a Gogol novel. There's a guy in Gogol like shoveling coal in the bowels of a ship. But why? I don't understand it. What's the point of the hair on the back, number one, and then the hair in the ear and the hair in the nose and off the head? Where does it come? Why? There's no logic to any of that. And you look at the Israeli cult leader charged with enslavement and rape at 60, a full head of hair on him. He has long white hair. He looks like a prophet. Let's say if I were a girl from San Francisco, inherited money, never worked a day in my life, I could see getting ensnared into a cult like that. A moron who throws pillows at somebody in the middle of a night, and they have nothing to do. They have no jobs. They inherit money from the parents. They live in Marin County or San Francisco. Nothing. They know nothing other than Obama's going to save the world from global warming and the polar bears are swimming on an ice floe, according to Al Gore. Anyway, so tomorrow's a big day. So I can't even have a beer tonight because the puffy, and so it's like a rough, it's like a, I got to go through a hole in a Spartan night. No Chinese food, no Italian. Eat a salad, you know, like training again for tomorrow. No, it's in there. I got to talk to them. How you doing? How are you? Secret location. I'm having someone meet them and take them to another house where the BBC and CNN came down by the water. Set them up, and that's it. It's just a picture, just a phase of my life. But for the movie, see, here's the thing I'm getting at. I thought of having a videographer come and watch it, calling the blank shoot, this whole shoot, like from the beginning to the end, them arriving, them setting up, me putting that. It's like a scene in that movie in the sense that I grew up on Road and Track in this magazine. When I was 17, I'd read this magazine and Road and Track. They were like equal to me. I always got like an opinion of the world based on these magazines. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Two faces have but I'm Mr. Blue.
Shalala.
I pretend that I'm happy.
Shalala.
Since I lost you.
Thank you, Beowulf. Two faces have I. By who? Luke Christie. Where is he today? I hope he's doing well. I envision a walker, an oxygen bottle somewhere, because they live better. This is the problem. Most of these guys led wild lives. I was schlepping along, working for degrees, raising a family, resenting it. But most of the guys who had like early successes, you know, they burned out. Like at 52, 53 already, old geezers, most of them. It's the way of the world. I mean, I once said to you, would you rather have success early or late in your life? Very few have it their whole life. You know, either you get it early or late. Very few get it early and keep it their whole life. The temptations are too great. You make it big at 20, my friend, you're dead by 40, 50, or broke, or working in talk radio. No, you're gone. There's no way you can hold on to it that long. It's hard. Too much. The money, the women, the adulation. And then when it starts to go, what do you got left? He's still alive, thank God. Luigi Alfredo Giovanni Sacco, born February 19, 1943, known professionally as Lou Christie. Lou, we wish you the best. We wish you the best, Lou. I was thinking about the hair thing. I know we should go back to Palin and Obama and Marxism. But, you know, I stumbled upon something. Look, I had a jazz clarinet player just a few callers before who said his father played with the greats, and he himself is a jazz clarinet player, and he loves my improvisation, so let me just run with it. I stumbled into the whole idea of why nature has given us the adaptation of excessive hair in the ears and the nostrils as we get older as men, and why we lose hair on the front, you know, like the head, the front of the... I said, there can be no biological adaptation for excess hair in the ears, nose, and the back coming over the collar and loss of hair in the front. And then I thought about why during the break. The guys screamed with hysteria. They knew I was right. They said, Eureka, you've stumbled upon the answer, Doc Savage. The answer is that it's to keep women from mating with you. In other words, when a woman sees excess hair in the ear and nose, she, ugh. You know, she goes the other way because, like, okay, he's too old to, like, have children with. No, that could be the whole thing. In other words, nature has genetic ways of telling women don't mate with you because he's over the hill, he's too old, he's going to either drop dead or run out of money or something. You know, go with a guy who doesn't have hair in the ears and nose. You got a better chance that he'll live long enough to take care of you and the kids. Is that a possibility for a physiological reason that God made it so that we get excess hair in the hair in the ear, ears, nose, and back, and less hair in the head? I'm joking here. It's probably got some fundamental truth to it. I know you want to talk about conservatives and liberals and Obama as this. I do it every day. I can do it. I can do it till the bluebird sings. But I don't want to do it no more. I did already politics. I only want to improvise on the horn. So I think I'm going to improvise a little bit more on the horn. I'm going to tell you another story. I'm going to tell you about the first time I went out on a sailboat in Honolulu. Came from New York. First excitement of the sea, the sun, flowers, plumeria. I could take on the world. I had never been in the tropics. I had been in the tropics, but nothing like this. I'm talking about a long time ago in my life. I get a sailboat, a 22-foot wooden sailboat with no motor, and I had never sailed, but I could do anything. I was afraid of nothing. I had overcome all of my past. I was a new man. I was Icarus. I take the sailboat out of Alawai Yacht Harbor, and I'm doing great because I know the prevailing wind was blowing me out. I knew enough to let the wind puff the sail, blah, 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 and I steered it out, big tiller. It was a beautiful 22-foot sailboat, all wood, solid as a rock. Someone had sailed it in from Oregon. I go out. I'm sailing away, and about 20 minutes out to sea, I realize I can't get back. I had no motor. I had no compass. And I didn't know how to turn the boat around. So now, that analogy is exactly the way Obama is running the country. The man had the hubris of a young man. He became the president. He thought he could do anything. But now he's stuck without a compass, without a motor. And frankly, I don't think he has a rudder. And we, the people, know it. And that's what I wanted to say to you. We're in trouble. And so the last thing we want is somebody without experience on the good ship America. We need somebody with military experience, business experience, but most importantly, somebody who believes in borders, language, and culture and can prove it. Somebody who passes the Savage litmus test. And my friends, I don't know who that might be, but we've got to keep hoping because I believe in hope and I believe in change.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Hey, It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
Oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
My God, there's no end to stories today. News, wherever you turn. Let's begin with Margaret Thatcher, former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, who said, "The problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money." Wow. I guess that's something that Obama missed when he was reading Saul Alinsky's cheat sheets. The fact of the matter is that many writers are saying Obama has lost the nation. One poll after another shows that the American people have caught on to his false claim to be a mainstream centrist. They know that he's an extremist. That would be so obvious to anybody. Not only the bailouts, but giving terrorists extra legal rights, giving civilian trials to 9/11 plotters, using rules of engagement for our military that are impossible, causing the deaths right now in Afghanistan of our Marines, who say they've never seen anything like this, where they see the enemy firing weapons, and then the minute the town is captured, throwing their weapons into the ditch and blending into the civilian population. And by their rules of engagement, they're not being allowed to capture or kill them. And then they come back and kill them later as snipers. And they said, we can't win a war like this. Many, many reasons. The White House is seen to be, it's being run by a captain without a compass, frankly, or without an engine. And that's what we're going to talk about, not only today, but frankly, the rest of this week, because it's endless what this guy has done. And this ties right into what I have called Obama for many, many months, almost a year now, not a neocon, but a neocom, C-O-M, a neo-communist. You see, in the middle of Obama's failed attempt to impose socialized medicine on America, which he's been caught for, you mustn't forget that most of his far-left infrastructure is still in place. Obama may have been stopped in his attempt to build a dictatorship through the medical takeover, but you have to remember that we are being ruled over by a new class of czars, the likes of which have not been seen since the last days of the Romanov dynasty in Russia. Some of them you know. One of these czars, Van Jones, came from being a street thug in California, and he's now trying to impose green fascism on America, even though global warming has been uncovered as a fraud. And before you move on and say big deal, remember Anita Dunn, who called Mao Zedong one of her heroes? Before she was exposed and forced to step down. Remember, Anita Dunn linked Mao Zedong with Mother Teresa. Mao Zedong caused the death of 60 million Chinese. A third of Obama's czars, Ron Blum, said he agreed with Mao Zedong that power comes from the barrel of a gun. And now he still is in power. We're in very, very deep trouble right now. Now, it's true that Obama's a neocom. We know that. We just don't know what level of calm he is. Benign or malevolent, we don't know. You see, traditionally in nations such as the Soviet Union, Cuba, North Korea, a communist means complete state control of culture and the economy. But many communist states of today, such as China, have hybridized their state control of the economy with a limited amount of capitalist freedom. But the Chinese Communist government still allows no freedom of speech, no freedom of religion, no freedom of thought. So while it's not identical to the Iron Heel of Stalin, it is a form of neo-communism. Now, of course, Obama's neo-communism does not seek complete state control, not yet. You can still go to whatever church you want, just make sure it doesn't speak out too loudly against the administration. You can more or less write anything you want, just don't expect to get a publisher if your views are too strongly anti-Obama. You can make billions on Wall Street if you make the right campaign contributions. You see, we don't have commissars in America as the communists of other states. You see, we don't have commissars in America as the communists of other nations do. But we do have hidden czars. They still run the government without the approval of the people or the Congress. And although the media seems to have forgotten about them, they're still a clear and present danger to democracy, as are all of the other neocons in the Obama administration. I was rereading Plato's Republic, which I first read in Jamaica High School, where we had a real education. Think about how far this country has fallen, that I had to read Plato's Republic in high school when I went to high school. Now you could just imagine they can't even read. And then they sue the school because there's not enough diversity. And they need more science labs for children who'll use the chemistry set to kill each other with. Oh, so here's what I found on page 96. It's a paragraph. It's not going to bore you. This is from Plato's Republic. If we adhere to our original notion and bear in mind that our guardians, meaning our politicians, setting aside every other business, are to dedicate themselves wholly to the maintenance of freedom in the state, making this their craft and engaging in no work which does not bear on this end, they ought not to practice or imitate anything else. Did you hear what Plato wrote in The Ideal Republic? That the one and sole job that politicians are supposed to dedicate themselves to is the maintenance of freedom in the state. Now, I want to ask you, and I want you to be honest with yourself, are you going to tell me that Obama has devoted himself to maintaining freedom in the United States of America? Can you honestly say that this man has tried to engender more freedom for the average American? And I would appeal to liberals who are literate out there to understand the danger we are in. Here is a president who, since he has seized power with this regime of change, the man has appointed Marxist czars who are not even answerable to the people, let alone to Congress. The man has kowtowed to foreign dictators. He has bowed down to the king of Saudi Arabia. He has bowed down to the dictator of China. He has conducted hostile takeovers of whole industries. Remember, General Motors. He has bribed senators and congressmen and women to have them vote for this so-called insurance grab. And you're going to tell me that Obama the Magnificent meets up to what Plato wrote is the ideal politician, the ideal party, is that a guardian should set aside every other business and dedicate themselves wholly to the maintenance of freedom in the state? I stumbled upon it the other day because it's a funny thing. I was bored of everything. I couldn't watch TV anymore. I couldn't read anymore. So every time I dip back to the classics, it's as though I have gone back to an alpine brook that I know about. It's hidden somewhere way up at, 8,000 feet. And I have to climb a long way to get to it. And I dip my little Boy Scout cup into that brook. And I take a sip of this glacial water. And I remember what pure water is, despite all the filters and all of the bottles and all of the water from Fiji and here and there. None of it's pure. You have to go way up to the mountaintop and you got to dip your cup into glacial water to know what pure water is. And it's the same with ideas and thoughts. You've got to go back to the fountainhead. And the fountainhead of all of Western civilization can be found in the ancient Greeks, in Plato, in Aristotle, and in others. And only by going back to the ancients and the classics can you understand really the game that we're involved in here, or where we have fallen, or where we have to struggle to get back to. I don't know how else to put it to you. And I put it to you as best as I can.
Savage.
Media and the Obama administration, they keep touting green jobs, green jobs, green jobs. They keep saying how these green jobs are going to be the cornerstone of our new economy.
Green jobs are the jobs of the future. Not just because they pay well and can't be outsourced, and not just because they help strengthen our economy and lift up our middle class, but because they help us reduce our dependence on foreign oil and may just save this planet for our children.
The choice we face is not between saving our environment and saving our economy. The choice we face is between prosperity and decline.
Our focus is going to be on green jobs. First and foremost, it means more jobs that keep up with our 21st century economy. We believe it's critical we find new and innovative ways to create more jobs.
Well, it's not looking good so far. Joining us now is Ben Lieberman to take a closer look into unemployment numbers and green jobs.
Well, thanks, Michael. In the midst of a recession, costly environmental legislation is not an easy sell. For that reason, the Obama administration and congressional proponents of an aggressive environmental agenda have tried to recast their policies as a boost to the economy rather than a drain on it. From the stimulus package to global warming legislation to the Senate's upcoming jobs bill, the latest mantra is green jobs, employment to be created by imposing various environmental measures. But the reality is that these efforts increase federal spending and exert new control over the private sector. Thus, they're more likely to harm the economy and reduce the prospects for net job growth. Genuine job creation can be achieved not through more environmental red tape, but less. in particular by allowing more domestic energy production.
Well, but can't these green jobs help reduce unemployment?
No, they can't. Not when they require significant government assistance in the first place. When the president and Congress talk about green jobs, they're talking about ones created via federal tax breaks, subsidies, or outright mandates. For example, wind and solar generated electricity currently enjoys subsidies nearly 50 times higher per unit energy output than ordinary coal and 100 times higher than natural gas. Green job subsidies like these siphon jobs and resources away from other parts of the economy. A study of alternative energy in Spain estimates that the cost of such subsidies for wind and solar prevents 2.2 private sector jobs for each green job created. Mandates such as the one for ethanol and gasoline and a proposed one for wind and solar and electricity kill jobs by raising energy costs. The only reason these alternative energy sources need to be mandated in the first place is that they're too expensive to compete otherwise. Thus, in addition to forcibly supplanting traditional energy jobs, renewable energy mandates raise energy costs and thus destroy jobs, especially in the energy-intensive manufacturing sector. President Obama has done many media events at wind turbine factories and the like, boasting about the green jobs at each. However, for every federally created green job seen, there are unseen jobs that are destroyed. This is certainly the experience around the world with the green jobs agenda. As mentioned, Spain has likely destroyed more jobs than it has created, and its extensive subsidies for wind and solar have led to not less of joblessness, but more. The unemployment rate in Spain is nearly 19%, double the U.S. rate. Doesn't seem that green jobs are creating prosperity there. The same is true as Denmark, Spain, other countries that have gone further down the green jobs road. The global experience is that market interventions to try to increase green employment hurt the overall economy. That may also apply in California as well, which stands out among the states as moving more aggressively in imposing a green economy. California also has unemployment considerably higher than the national average. And although several factors play a part in California's economic problems, its energy and environmental problem, global warming measures, alternative energy mandates, other regulations that raise conventional energy prices, are likely part of the reason that the state's overall unemployment rate is higher than the nation overall.
Isn't this the same with global warming legislation?
Keep in mind, bills like the Senate Kerry-Boxer cap-and-trade bill are designed to drive up the cost of fossil fuels, the coal, oil, and natural gas that provide 85% of America's energy, to drive up those costs so that we're forced to use less. This would result in net job losses. By a Heritage Analysis estimate, over 1 million net job losses if we are to impose global warming measures like that. Now, there are better ways to create jobs. The solution is not more environmental red tape, but less. Due to regulatory restrictions, America has access to only a fraction of its oil and natural gas reserves, both onshore and offshore. By one estimate, a reinvigorated offshore and offshore energy program could create up to 160,000 new jobs by 2030. Bills such as the No-Cost Stimulus Act and others seek to streamline the process by which domestic energy production can expand. And unlike wind, solar, biofuels, and other alternatives that need billions in tax dollars each year to survive, the energy companies that wish to expand domestic oil and gas production are willing to pay the government many billions of dollars for the rights to do so. Now, whether they're deemed green jobs or not, these are real jobs created without taxpayer dollars and thus devoid of offsetting jobs elsewhere. So there is a real way to create jobs as regards energy in this country, and that's removing the environmental red tape, not adding to it.
Thanks for the report, Ben.
Thank you.
We have an astonishing caller. John in Chicago, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, John?
I heard you got excited when you talked to that man about OSS. I'm an original agent.
You are.
1943.
You are one of the original guys who worked with Wild Bill?
That's correct. I was an OG, operational group. And then later they wanted me going as a spy, but I declined.
And what kind of stuff, John, what type of things did you do that you can share with the audience today?
We were trained to parachute, submarine, or infiltrate with an LCI, live off the land, no doctors, no nurses, no supplies, no tactical support, and no route of withdrawal. And blow up trains. We blew up 5 enemy troop trains, German troop trains.
So did you work with the partisans in France?
No. In the Balkans.
Oh, you worked in Yugoslavia. That's a heartbreaking story because the Serbs, as you well know, protected the American flyers better than any other group in the Balkans. and they were rewarded for that rescuing American flyers by Bill Clinton when he conducted the war crime of bombing them for 88 merciless days using U.S. Air Force planes repainted in NATO markings. You know about that travesty, John, don't you?
Yes, I know, but the OSS people were on the island of Vis in the Dalmatian group. And when the planes were coming back after bombing the plus the oil fields, anyone that was crippled could make it back would land there. And then John Hamilton, Sterling Hayden, was part of the OSS, and he had a speedboat, brought in supplies. He would take them out.
Wait, you mean the actor Sterling Hayden was part of that group?
Yes.
And well, those were the days when Hollywood produced patriots instead of, let us say, enemies of the state. How old a man are you, John?
Next month, I get my 88th birthday and enter my 89th year.
John, is there anything I can send you for your birthday? I don't want to just send you a book. I'd like to you're a hero of the Savage Nation. I'm so honored that you're listening to the show out of Chicago on WIND. I mean, not only does this mean a lot to me, I think it means a lot to my listeners to realize what a hero you really are.
Well, I thank you.
John, I don't know what to say other than I'm just honored that you listen to the show.
Savage.
Joining us now on the Savage Nation for his exclusive update on the health care non-debate is Robert Scott Bell.
Thanks, Michael. It's good to be back. And it's really astonishing that we're following a story where a Republican senator is actually trying to bloat the bureaucracy so large that it explodes all over planet Earth. And, of course, we're talking about follow-up to last week's story. John McCain, that's right, sponsoring something known as the Dietary Supplement Safety Act. And you're thinking, well, wow, is there a great danger to supplements? We've got to have the federal government step in and protect us all from vitamins and minerals. Considering that nobody's really dying of those things, it's really quite absurd. But even more absurd is to consider that this is not just an agenda on a federal level, that there's a globalist agenda. Last week, we tied in the United Nations-sponsored Codex Alimentarius into this idea that all the world's laws, all the governments around the world should be the same in regards to harmonization, especially as it comes to limiting the freedom of speech when it comes to natural substances and their ability to treat, cure, prevent, mitigate anything related to something called disease. Now, there is a monopoly, and I'm calling this the McCain-McCancer monopoly, for instance, that there are substances like selenium, a trace element, that the FDA is not even allowing the supplement makers to reference the fact that there's peer-reviewed literature, many years, in fact, in the major medical journals showing how selenium is protective and even can be utilized as a treatment for cancer. And constitutional attorney Jonathan Emord, who's beaten the FDA more than anybody, in fact, was responsible years ago for a decision called Pearson versus Shalala. Remember Donna Shalala?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the government was trying to prohibit any reference to dietary supplements and their ability to promote good health or prevent disease. And he took them on, beat the FDA back, and then from that point forward, they were actually allowed to have what they call limited structure function claims or statements. You know that, well, vitamin D prevents rickets. Oh my gosh, that's big news, right? Vitamin C prevents scurvy, you know, or a little bit more forward than that. But then cherry juice manufacturers got in trouble, the farmers, because they acknowledged that drinking cherries, eating cherries would reduce arthritis, reduce inflammation like gout. And of course, now cherries became a new unapproved drug by the federal government. Now, this is the kind of protection we need. We've got to be protected from cherry farmers who would dare acknowledge that their products can prevent gout.
Just further proof that liberals do not want people to empower themselves with natural medicine.
How outrageous it is for us to think that we should have the right to have the freedom of speech here. And so we have medical collectivism and federal paternalism rearing its ugly head again in the guise of this John McCain proposed legislation. Like, we need further restriction on the knowledge of how to care for our families, how to care for our children without resorting first to drugs for everything. There's always going to be a place for that, but to make it a monopoly, of course, is not an American ideal. It's not an American tradition unless you're a big government Democrat or a big government Republican, for which we know the phony conservatism of John McCain. If you needed another level of revelation here, it should be clear by now. And we asked, you know, the question legitimately, who's going to stand for liberty now if establishment Republicans and Democrats are siding with the United Nations globalization agenda of Codex Alimentarius? And, of course, what I call a big pharma protection racket when they harmonize all supplements to negligible levels where they cannot do anything at all of what they're designed to do. So are we for medical collectivism or are we for freedom of speech? We've got champions out there that are literally trying what their level best, basically, just to be able to communicate something that we should pride ourselves on here in America, that we believe in the ability to speak these truths, even if others disagree with them. You know, you could be a shill for Big Pharma. That's okay. But if you want to block the freedom of someone who acknowledges and knows the role of dietary nutrient supplements to address similar things that drugs are trying to do, and you don't want that to happen, that, for me, it steps over the line there.
Exactly.
Steps over the line into some form of fascism, or as we say, medical collectivism, that everybody is suffering from a drug deficiency disease, which, of course, is ludicrous. So where is the freedom to know about natural health options? And I'd say especially those not approved by government, those approved by the FDA. I mean, why is it illegal to cure cancer without federal and state permission? Isn't that kind of strange? You think about the founding fathers way back when. Well, we're going to establish a republic, you know. We broke free of tyranny. We had a declaration of independence. But now we have to establish some sort of monopoly because we need to protect the American people that come after us, our posterity, from the dangers of knowing how to use herbs and supplements to prevent, cure, treat, mitigate, even cancer. Of course, again, when you think of it this way, now it becomes ludicrous. And this has always been about freedom. Those that have argued, oh, it's only about what works and what doesn't, and we're just trying to protect. No, it's always been about freedom and monopoly. And it's like, you know, the modern mafia, the medical mafia. Some of my medical doctor friends will talk about it that, and in that term, you're still astonished. They're talking about the medical mafia. What is that? And of course, this is the protection racket that is played to secure their turf, to prevent, as we say, in the Dietary Supplement Safety Act of John McCain, it's not to protect the American people. It's to protect Big Pharma from competition with the substances of the natural world, the gifts of what I would call creation, a fundamental freedom that we are endowed by our Creator, by virtue of our birth. And now we're looking to McCain and Democratic dunderheads as well to protect us from that, to protect us from that. Fundamental freedoms, and I think one of the most critical ones is this freedom to heal, the freedom to know about these natural substances and to actually communicate them. And then we've got more attacks on it because we've got, you know, this year, 2010, moving into 2012, I think we've got some interesting developments in regards to the restoration of true conservatism. And this is happening in spite of the Republican Party, you know, whether it be from the Tea Party movement or otherwise.
Well, like what?
There was big news out of Texas this week. I find it interesting because there's this sweet little nurse, a former nurse. Now she's running for governor of Texas, this huge state. And she's actually making some inroads, some tracks. She believes in the Constitution. She believes in limited government. And she's speaking out against the federal grab of all of these things that are not allowed by the Constitution, something I think that is frightening those in the federal government, this concept that the states would dare use the 10th Amendment and nullify laws that are in violation of the limitations put on the federal government by the Constitution. Of course, we're talking about Deborah Medina. She's a darling of the Tea Party movement. And interestingly enough, she was interviewed on talk radio last week. A guy, you know this guy, Glenn Beck.
Don't get me started.
Oh, my gosh, I think he revealed himself finally, once and for all, if we needed that, to be the phony conservative that he is, when he went after her. For what? What was wrong with her talking about the Constitution, limited government? She's going up against a liberal Republican, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, lots of those now, and Rick Perry. This is the guy we covered mandating little girls get Gardasil shots for HPV. How conservative is that? Where is the role of the parent in deciding how to utilize the wonders, if we want to call it, a modern medicine, or perhaps the dangers? And She's coming up, and she's actually gaining some steam here. She's nudging upwards of neck and neck with Kay Bailey Hutchinson, which could force a runoff between her and Rick Perry to see if a true conservative would run for governor in Texas. And what does Beck do? He ambushes her about asking, does she know if anybody working with her is a 9/11 truther?
What?
And she simply answers, well, what does that have to do with anything here in Texas? I'm running as a conservative to bring the Constitution back to limit the government. And he was just trashing her on this. I'm thinking, where did this come from? What does this have to do with? And even the fact that you would be a thought police kind of person, whether you believe in what has been told to us by the federal government completely about that issue, that's a whole other story. But the fact is, you don't trash a small government conservative based on associations like that, whether they even exist. And so we're seeing more and more of these phony conservatives trying to trash the real Tea Party movement, which is not an establishment Republican movement. And so, you know, the repetition here is that I would urge everybody to look at the candidates that both the Democrats and the Republicans don't get behind, because that is going to tell you something. Those are the people we need to be looking to, because they're the grassroots, they're the average people saying, hey, I've had enough of these career politicians, and it's time to do something different, something much different, in fact. I mean, when you got both also Democrats and Republicans still trying to argue for cap and trade or global warming, the whole world is, you know, it's going to be water world with Kevin Costner suddenly. You realize more and more of that phony science is being revealed for the phoniness that it is. The United Nations climate panel just admitted that the Dutch sea levels were not where they said they were, right? There was this 2007 report that said the Netherlands is an example of a country highly susceptible to both sea level rise and river flooding because 55% of its territory is below sea level. And of course, it turns out, you know, if it were 20%, that was what was news. Again, more garbage, junk science promoting global government, governance in this case. Global warming, of course, you know, Michael, is soundly unscientific in its attempt to enslave the people of planet Earth to an elitist global government, which is definitely what McCain's all about right now with his push to regulate or remove dietary supplements indiscriminately. If the FDA doesn't like it, it's gone. According to this, freedom to know what it does. Well, you can be free to know what it does after that bill passes, but you won't have any access to it. Sounds patently un-American to me. And of course, these phony talk show hosts out there claiming to be conservatives going rah-rah McCain, rah-rah establishment elitist Republicans, as if they are about small government. They haven't been. If they have been ever, they certainly haven't been for a long, long time.
True.
Well, Michael, I'm grateful for what you're doing to get the word out on true small government conservatism, because, again, if we're going to restore liberty to this country, that's going to be the way to do it. You can link through the blog at robertscottbell.blogspot.com. Very grateful to you and the Savage Nation audience for the support of liberty in this way. We really need to do all we can to gain it back for our kids and grandkids. And once again, thanks a lot, Michael.
Thanks for the report, Robert.
Savage.
Here are some of the selected headlines from MichaelSavage.com. The big one making a lot of noise right now is Palin not electable, says Savage. Breitbart picked it up from YouTube, and he heard what I actually said and ran the long quote. You can listen to it yourself. I didn't say she's not likable. I didn't say that she's wrong in her opinions. I said she's not electable, says Savage. And my quote is, if you want Obama for a second term, just make sure that Sarah Palin is the Republican nominee. Don't miss this story on Michael Savage. Heroin dealers from Mexico, that is from a small town in Mexico, are changing heroin use in many parts of America. They actually go to clinics to meet addicts trying to quit, and they're selling them a thing called brown heroin. They've also targeted white suburbs because it's safer for them, and they're not in competition with the big Mexican cartels. It's from the LA Times. Don't miss it. Did you know that the chief global warming scientist admits that it's all fake? It's right on out of the London Daily Mail. I mean, you got to read this thing. The man, the academic at the center of ClimateGate, whose raw data is crucial to the theory of climate change, has said that he had trouble keeping track of all of the data. In other words, he doesn't know where it is. He made it up! From Indiana, Senator Evan Bayh said bye-bye. He will not seek re-election this November. He was 20 points up in the poll. Nobody knows why he's withdrawing. Michael's guess? You want Michael's guess? Think John Edwards.
Oh.
Someone's about to come out of the closet. I don't mean him, you know. I'm just saying a woman is my guess. There's some scandal about to burst. Okay? Cheney mum on Palin's qualifications. Ah. Cheney ducked answering whether former Alaska Governor Palin is qualified to be president. Frankly, he should run. I think he'd win in a landslide. Dems turn on Obama to save their own skins. I don't know if you saw this on Michael Savage, but Obama has appointed a U.S. representative to the Muslim Alliance, the U.S. Islamic World Forum in Qatar. He's created a special envoy. I think that's very sensitive of him. The lawyer for the jailed church workers in Haiti, the man providing legal advice to the Americans charged with trying to take children out of Haiti, was tied to child prostitution and did jail time in the U.S. for bank fraud. How do you like that, Beowulf?
I wonder if he has anything to do with AIG, heaven forbid.
Michael Goodwin writes, if only Obama would do what's right on terror. Lebanon fires on Israeli warplanes. Trouble losing weight? You need the right altitude, according to German scientists. That's right. You spend time at higher altitudes, you lose weight. That's because you don't want to live. On the bottom of michaelsavage.com, don't miss this. It's shocking, but not unexpected, because I once worked in a morgue. I had to leave when I was very young. Ghouls at play in NYC morgues. The people employed to respectfully handle the remains of the deceased have instead turned cadavers and body parts into macabre playthings, including holding up heads. It's unbelievable. I didn't see that when I was working in a morgue, but it was enough for me. And by the way, the man at the center of the Katrina scam passes the buck. Take a look at him up on michaelsavage.com. In the middle of Obama's failure to force socialized medicine down everyone's throat, we can't forget the threat posed by the czars that he has appointed. Let's look at some of those he's had to let go. First, there was Anita Dunn, who praised Chairman Mao at a high school grad. Listen.
And then the third lesson and tip actually come from two of my favorite political philosophers, Mao Zedong and Mother Teresa, not often coupled with each other, but the two people that I turn to most to basically deliver a simple point, which is you're going to make choices. You're going to challenge. You're going to say, why not? You're going to figure out how to do things that have never been done before. But here's the deal. These are your choices. They are no one else's.
Then there was Van Jones, the Oakland street guy who was going to be Obama's green job czar. Listen to him.
We don't understand the relationship between minimum goals and maximum goals. Right after Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat, if the civil rights leaders had jumped out and said, okay, now we want reparations for slavery, we want redistribution of all wealth, and we want to legalize mixed marriages, that had been there. They had come out with a maximum program the very next day, they'd have been laughed at. Instead, they came out with a very minimum program. We just want to integrate these buses.
I guess everyone's laughing at you now, Van. But although Van Jones is gone, Ron Blum, Obama's car czar, is still there. Listen to this guy.
Generally speaking, we get the joke. We know that the free market is nonsense. We know that the whole point is to game the system, to beat the market, or at least find someone who'll pay you a lot of money because they're convinced that there is a free lunch. We know this is largely about power, that it's an adults-only, no-limit game. We kind of agree with Mao that political power comes largely from the barrel of a gun. And we get it, that if you want a friend, you should get a dog.
Did you hear that? The barrel of a gun. This man is basically in charge of government motors. And there's Cass Sunstein, the regulatory czar, who doesn't take kindly to the Second Amendment. Listen to this jerk.
My coming view is that the individual right to bear arms reflects the success of an extremely aggressive and resourceful social movement and has much less to do with good standard legal arguments than appears.
Do you think this kind of jerk could get approved if he had to go through a confirmation process? And here's a czar who's been in the news lately, counterterrorism advisor John Brennan. He says a 20% recidivism rate for the terrorists. Well, that's not bad. 1 out of 5 going back to terrorism. He says that's not bad.
People sometimes use that figure, 20%, and say, oh, my goodness, 1 out of 5 detainees return to some type of extremist activity. You know, the American penal system, the recidivism rate is up in about 50% or so as far as return to crime. 20% isn't that bad.
Well, at least a few Republicans, even the rhino Lindsey Graham, will not swallow that one. Listen to him.
Can you really have a system where the parents of the terrorists will encourage the terrorists to cooperate with the FBI? Is it any way to fight a war to read Miranda rights? And do you want someone in charge of counterterrorism who finds a 20% return to the fight rate is acceptable?
With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.